Mr. Duncan, reel one. Whereabouts were you born, please?
Village of Oakfield, near Ryde, Isle of Wight.
Which year was that?
1922.
And what did your father do for a living?
He was an ex-naval chap. Most of the family on my father's side, they were all ex-Navy.
Royal Navy?
Royal Navy, yeah.
Did you go to school on the island?
Yes, yeah.
And how old were you when you left?
We left the Isle of Wight before I left school. The system on the Isle of Wight, we started school at 3 years of age. And not baby minding, it was an actual infant school where you started lessons at 3 years of age, you know. And then in the slump of the early 30s, the family moved on to Portsmouth to get work. You know, there was no work over there at all.
And so you left school at what age?
14.
That would be 1936.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
What did you do on leaving school? Get a job?
Yes, yes. I had wanted to go into the Navy, but father wouldn't let me go in. I wanted to go to Greenwich School. A young boy come home from the Greenwich School, petty officer with all these buttons on. This appealed to me, plus the fact that all the family, my uncles on his side, were all in the Navy, you know. But he wouldn't let me go to Greenwich. When we moved to Portsmouth, at the age of 11, coming up for the... I even got my mother to take me over to Asler to pass the examination, which I did. Then I had to get his signature. So I took the form home, waiting for him to come home from work, and had it on the mantelpiece, you know. He just rips it up and put it in the fire. This was because of his own service boy, in the Navy.
Was he embittered about it?
Yes. No, he idolised the Navy, but he wouldn't... his next brother to him was a PO at one time, and the youngest but one brother joined the Navy as a boy, and he caught him smoking. And they used to burst them, you know, drop their pants and burst them in those days. And Dad wouldn't want me to be subjected to this sort of treatment. So the next stage that I could have gone in would have been 15 and a half as a junior. And he wouldn't wear that even. By this stage, I've gone up to every year Whale Island. They used to hold field gun events. Kids could go along and you'd get in the drill shed and they'd let you handle a rifle. And they even had 16-inch gun turrets up there, you know. So this appealed to me even more. But he still wouldn't let me go at 15 and a half. So I said, he was a stoker. And I said, I'm not going in stoking, I'm going to go to gunnery. I knew what I wanted, you know. And I said, let me join the TA and get some experience that way. So he agreed to this, and I falsified me age by a year and joined the Royal Hampshires, as it was. I couldn't get in the artillery in Portsmouth, being only a tit, so he wouldn't take us, like, you know, because it was coastal artillery. And
this was 38?
Yes, 38 when I'm in the Royal Amps.
And what kind of training did you get with them?
Very good, because quite a lot of them were First World War soldiers. Really, most of them from the regiment, too, you know, the amateurs. I was in the machine gun company, or platoon, rather, in the support company. First camp I did was at Corfe Castle. We went out on a night manoeuvre marching, not well marching in those days, which was supposed to have been 15 mile, but finished up more like 25 mile, you know, which I stuck out. they're all on to me, carry your rifle and all this, and I wouldn't let them, you know, pride wouldn't let them. And when we went down for the Dicker shoot at Chickerall, the platoon commander even let me fire his number one of the Vickers, which is quite a thing, with only less than a year of training, you know. And then, as I saw it, unfortunately, in 1938, they converted the 6th Battalion, Duke of Connaught's Home, as it was, to artillery, anti-tank, two-pounder anti-tanks. And we became 59th Anti-Tank Regiment, RA.
How did you feel about the conversion?
Well, obviously, most of these old amateur men didn't like it, and we were given the option of remustering or terminating your, as it was, four-year engagement in the TA. Most of them terminated.
But you didn't?
I didn't, no. I wanted to carry on because I was still had this plan that when I was old enough, 18 and a half, to go into the Navy, my father couldn't stop me. I was going to go. So we went to Lark Hill, Phil Rains, in the August, did a two-pounder shoot there. But prior to this, we, all Belisha, you've heard of this, all Belisha formed a militiamen, as they were. This was April, wasn't it, in 39.
Yes.
And they gave, I think it was 21 was the call-up age, and they gave them the opportunity to join the TA or be called up for this national service. Most TA units overnight were swamped with chaps who obviously would prefer to do 4 years in the TA than do 6 months national service. So we could actually form within a week about two regiments of artillery, you know. And we went to Lark Hill in the August, 39. A civilian job was a cinema operator. So we came back on the Sunday, and on the Monday I went down to the recruiting office to join the Navy. PO gave me a test and everything, educational test, and he said, right, fair enough, you know, you've passed. Tomorrow, if you report to the naval barracks, you'll get your medical. So I said, well, hang on, PO. I said, I've lost one day's work this week. Can I go next Monday? So that'll be one day out of each week. So, fair enough, he said. On the Friday, at 4 o'clock in the morning, a telegram arrived at the door. I was called up with the anti-tank regiment, 59th Anti-Tank Regiment.
So you very narrowly missed going into the Navy.
Yes. Well, in fact, my father knew what I wanted, and he said, look, you've put your age on by a year. I'll come down and drill on and tell him you. I said, no way in the world will you. And so I went into the Army instead of the Navy. I'm not coming out until 1946. I certainly wasn't going to go in the Navy then.
Can you tell me about the kind of equipment that the anti-tank regiment had?
Yes, we only had the two pounders, and that would be about a troop, just six guns, until the outbreak of war, and then they were taken away from us, obviously, because of the regular units going over to France, and they had to equip them. So, I was called up in the September, and it would be the October, we left Portsmouth and went to Southampton, and we were on dock duties, loading trucks and things like that for a BAF. And then in November, I was declared amongst 40 other lads as immature. We were too young to go overseas. So they posted us from this anti-tank unit to the Isle of Wight, where there was a sister battalion of the Hampshire Regiment, the 8th Battalion, Princess Betty's own Isle of Wight Rifles, had been converted to coastal artillery. So
this was the 530 Coast Regiment RA?
That's right, yes, yeah.
And what was that unit supposed to do?
They manned the battery at Needles, 9-2 battery, Cliff End had 6-inch, Naval 4-7s, and at Fort Victoria, just down below Cliff End, was 12-pounders. At Baldner, they had a 6-inch battery. So the 40 of us were stationed at Golden Hill Fort, which was the HQ of the regiment, where we underwent extensive training carried out by the RSM, who was a brilliant, brilliant man, regular RSM, of course. And it was there that I first really got into the ballistics of gunnery. He really gave us a wonderful course, you know, and we trained on these 6-inch guns, 9-2. We went up to, and this was the irony of it, we were too young to go overseas with these little 2-pounders. And there we finished up with 6-inch, was 100 pounds in weight. And we were loading this. They had a dummy loader system whereby you ran the shell in, or dummy shell in, and it come out the other end and was collected again and brought round in the chain to load it. And the thing with the coastal artillery, they used to say that at Shrewsbury Nest, the gunnery school, they had achieved a record of 18 rounds a minute through this dummy loader. And there he was driving us, trying to get this 18 rounds a minute through this dummy loader. And we were all really only little titches, as you might say, you know.
How muscular did you have to be?
You had to do it. That's just all there was to it, you know. And they stood on their base, these 6-inch shells, and you'd get crouched down, push it over into the crook of your arm, and lift it up like that, carry it over to the breech of the gun, and drop it on the shock guide, and then two men would ram it home, like, you know. But we were young and fit, you know, so it was a challenge to us, you know.
Did anybody do themselves an injury?
Oh, yeah, because of the excitement of it, the two rammer men, they'd ram the... you'd drop it on the shock guide and say, take your arms away, and they would ram it in. But in the exuberance amongst us, the rammer would very often go astray as a wooden rammer and collect you in the jaws of the business, you know. And then you had to stop there and put your arms back to receive the charge, the canvas bag charge, which you took off of another gun number, placed it inside the chamber, and you weren't supposed to report in, obviously, until your arm come out of the way. But very often the in would come a bit quick and the breech number would slam the breech over, you know.
But did you get people rupturing themselves?
No,
or straining their backs? Or?
No. We were all keen. And these immatures weren't in the category of the men that joined so that they wouldn't do national service. Because of their age, they wouldn't have called at that stage anyway, for national service anyway.
Did you, we're talking about the winter of 39-40 now,
oh,
aren't we?
Bitter over there.
Did you expect a German invasion at that time?
No. 39 we're talking about.
Yes.
39, no way at all. In fact, I don't know if they carried on the routine right the way through the war, but we had, once we'd finished this training, we were posted out to the various batteries. Because of our size, no one went to the 9-2 battery, because you're now talking about 280-pound projectiles, you know, which are mechanically lifted up anyway. Most of us went to the 1-6-inch battery at Baldmore. And as I say, they had this routine of three complete detachments. One detachment manning the two guns for 24 hours. The other detachment down in the camp doing fatigues. And the third detachment had 24 hours off. If they carried on like that throughout the war, it must have been very boring and very tedious. Now, in April of 40, the biggest majority of the 40 of us, plus others, were posted to Canvey Island, Thames and Medway Coastal Battery. Again, it was a 6-inch battery. But
did it have a number?
I can't remember the number, I sort of put it. It was the TA unit that manned the Shrewsbury Nest. I think they went down as far as Shrewsbury Nest. All the Thames and Medway coastal batteries.
And what was it like there?
It's Canvey Island. The guns were built on a flood bank, and again, it was this boring, tedious, which to us youngsters, but the rumour was that we were going to go to Norway, which of course they weren't in Norway 2 minutes before they were withdrew. Thing about this Isle of Wight unit, I had a unique experience of serving with two men that went to school with my father, because quite a lot of them were born, there were actually eight in Cliff End Battery that were born in the bread in the same street that I was, and been called up as a TA unit.
But whilst you were there, the German attack on France took place.
That's,
and Dunkirk.
Yeah, no, yeah. At Canvey Island, this is so. In fact, we had about 20 reservists who'd been called up and gone to France and come back through Dunkirk, including two brothers, officer brothers, Comerford, their name were, that came with these, about 20 of them came posted to the same unit. But we were hopelessly overmanned for 2 6-inch guns anyway. But the next thing that happened, these reservists, plus about 10 of us immatures, with these two officers, marched along this flood bank towards the Thames Avon fuel tanks to meet a truck with a PO with 2 3-pounder naval guns on it, which we took off the truck and we emplaced on the bank as anti-motor torpedo weapons, because by this stage now they were worrying about invasion. This would be about the June of 1940.
Did you see the flotillas going off to Dunkirk?
Yes. No, not going off. We saw them coming back. And we were able to see them through the scopes on the gun, like, you know.
What did it look like?
Well, I think it would have been more impressive had we been able to see them go, because they were coming back in dribs and drabs, having dropped the troops down at Dover on the safe coast, they then came back up through the Thames in dribs and drabs. So it was nowhere near as spectacular as it must have been to see them all go. We also saw, I think it was the Ajax, yeah, the Ajax, when she come back from the River Platte and went up the crew marched through the City of London, didn't they? They were given freedom as City of London. So we were all able to watch, look at the damage of the superstructure on that, you know.
But when the fall of France occurred and Dunkirk, did you feel that worried about the fate of the country, or did you feel confident?
The group, the peers, were all my age, and we didn't fear, you know, we weren't. And I suppose really and truly this business of immaturity might have something to do with it. We weren't mature enough really to make a reason. So they definitely never expressed any fear or concern myself. Personally, I felt concerned knowing that my brother was at Dunkirk with the 2nd Battalion, the Ants. I obviously felt concerned for that. But
did the German Air Force attack you?
Yes. In fact, we saw the first daylight raid on London. 500 plus that was. They came across Shrewsbury Ness. And turned and followed the river up to London. That was the daylight raids. Shortly after that, they bombed the... We were playing football on a Saturday, actually, and we were about half a mile from the tanks, Thames Avon refinery tanks, you know. And they dive-bombed that and set them alight. Then for about a fortnight, we just couldn't see a thing above us. Ball of smoke anyway from the burning. At that stage, I was when we'd moved these three pounders into position outside of the 6-inch site, I'd become a Lewis gunner for the defence of it, ACAC defence of it, with the old Lewis gun. This again, obviously they lumbered me on that because of my Vickers machine gun experience, you know. And there's not much difference between one machine gun and another. I did fire at it, Dornier, but it was way above any chance of hitting it. But it was just.
Were they attacking your battery?
No. This was the Dornier that was coming down anyway and going towards Kent. We were at Essex, Canvey Islands, Essex, and Kent, the other side, and it was gradually losing height and going across. So I thought I'd have a go at it for the experience. No chance of hitting it, you know. In fact, though, the number two is a Scotch lad, Edgar, and he was one of these reservists that had come back from Dunkirk and hadn't fired a method of unloading, because the gun would be still cocked, and the method of unloading would be to pull the cocking handle back and ease it forward, squeeze the trigger and ease it forward over the and then eject the rein that way. But in this case, because the gun had been laying at an angle like that, the oil bottle in the butt had leaked, and there was oil all over the butt. And I'd got oil over my hand, and the bolt slipped through my thumb and finger, and he'd just gone round the outside of the pit to have a leak. This tracer, it happened to be a tracer. this went by about 6 inches. He dropped. I thought I'd shot him, you know. And suddenly his helmet come up above the sandbags. And he crudely told me that his wife would scratch my bleeding eyes out if she'd seen it. Much to my relief.
But you're only with that battery about 6 months.
Yes, yeah. And as I say, this tedious life of 24 hours leave, 24 hours up in this gun pit. And that's all you did. You sat up in these gun detachment shelters for 24 hours. Possibly the best part was the 24 hours that you were on fatigues in the camp, because at least you were moving around and active. And I'd come home on a leave, and my brother, my older brother, he had joined the Portsmouth 57th Heavy Attack before the war, long before the war he'd been in them. And they were stationed at Southsea Common. There was a 4-5 battery at Southsea Common. So I went down to see him. The founder said that he's down at Southsea Common, you know. So down I went to see him, and went in the canteen with him, the naffy, and took me over on the gun, showed me what their guns are like, you know. And then broached this idea of compassionately claiming me to his unit, which, because they'd been in action, had more appeal to me than these 6-inch guns, whereby the only action you saw, especially on the River Thames, the convoys had come up from Down River, and because there were a lot of foreign merchant vessels in there, they'd fly the wrong signal of the day, recognition signal. So the only action that you saw with these 6-inch guns was to carry out a bring to procedure, put a plug round across their bows, telling them under the international code to heave to or off for.
So what was the full name of the unit that you joined?
It was the 57th Wessex Heavy Attack Regiment, 214 Battery, because there were three batteries to a regiment. See.
And what kind of guns did they have?
They had these 4-5s. They were a naval gun, actually, mounted ashore around... The Navy gave up these 4-5 guns to be deployed around ports, their own ports, as part of their own defence. And they had a battery at Southsea Common, of 4-5s, and a battery at Gilkicker Point, which is across the other side of Portsmouth Harbour. And that's where I joined them at Gilkicker. Sister battery later on, because we used to swap around different sites, they actually had a gun detachment almost wiped out at Southsea Common. A bomb dropped in the gun pit. That was October that I joined at Gilkicker. And they had already had numerous night raids then. So even the day that I joined them, it was straight down the gun that